Welcome to Season 2, Episode 78 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today I have my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
We don't know if you're going to be here for long today. You're kind of having internet problems. Felt like we just even had a lag right there, but we have you now, and I'm happy about that. So we're going to make good use of this time. If there's anything I've learned in 2020, it's time is precious, so we're going to use this wisely. Moving right along, today with us is Mr. Connor Casey's back again.
Matt, if you've got grenades, now is the time.
Toss him and leave.
Toss him and leave, yeah. Just toss him and fade into the bushes like Homer Simpson. And also with us, one of our specialists that we don't get to talk to as often, but we're glad you're back, Nicole Drum from our DC. I try to categorize everybody's like expertise here, even though people know a lot about a lot. You are one of our elite DC team members, especially DC movie or TV front. But today we're recruiting you because we're going to be talking about another big development in the DC movie front, which is we got to talk about Jared Leto's Joker is making a comeback. You didn't think you would hear that in 2020, or at this point, maybe you did. We've also got to talk about a big kind of Marvel spoiler that dropped in a very nonchalant kind of way. First look at our Uncharted movie with Mark Wahlberg, and more importantly, at Tom Holland as Nathan Drake. So we're going to talk about that. We got to say RIP to the first casualty of the streaming war. And we are going to deep dive into comics today. We got a preview of WWE's Hell in a Cell. And because we love you guys and want to give you more, a little bit of the flavor of everything that we do here at comicbook.com, we've created a new section to the show, which is the rundown. We've basically taken all Matt's wish list stuff, plus all the random stuff I throw in and put it in one place. So at the end of the show, we give you kind of just quick hits about, you know, a lot of other things that are going around the geek sphere, whether it's about anime or other wrestling stuff, Power Rangers stuff, gaming. But that's just going to be kind of the quick hits at the end so that we can actually focus the discussion on some of our more main topics that you guys love, but still cover all the things we got to cover. So we're going to give you guys our first rundown and see if that's not a train wreck or if Matt's even here for that. So this will be interesting. Yeah. But let's start up at top from one problem at a time. And first problem for some people is the fact that Jared Leto's Joker is making a comeback in an announcement that nobody really expected yesterday. We got word, we've been hearing that it's been established that Zack Snyder's, this is all in relation to Zack Snyder's Justice League or the Snyder Cut, which we've now, you know, firmly established is an entire production that did not exist before, that is now being invested and built in, and they're even bringing back actors from the Snyderverse to reprise their DC roles and shoot new scenes and stuff for this Justice League, essentially miniseries that we're getting on HBO Max next year. And one of those people is, drum roll, Jared Leto's Joker. You already know the punchline, so you know how that's going. So yes, Jared Leto will suit back up again as Joker to do the reshoots for Zack Snyder's Justice League. And it's already kind of spawning people to think that this could be another tie-in, that Leto could be finally getting his due, that this could not just be the end, as so many things we have questions about this Snyder Cut and what it's actually doing. This is kind of like a weird reset button for DC movies, and people are already kind of speculating, like, this is going to set up more of Leto's performance. We'll get the David Ayer cut of Suicide Squad, maybe with extra Joker, I don't know, but how you guys feeling about this? Who here was asking for this? Unfortunately, Janelle Wheeler's not on this show because
Janelle.
Yeah. Yeah. Janelle's the only person who's been asking for it.
She would be hard stumping for this. But I mean, I'm curious. I was never a hater of Leto's performance. I think his Joker did some kind of interesting things that I liked, but I thought like so much of Suicide Squad, it was just muddled into this weird mess. And it was interesting to hear how some other scenes kind of played out in Ayer's kind of darker, twisted version with this Joker, who was kind of more of a mind screwer, like that whole scene with Common in the club and Harley Quinn. Like, originally, if you read the original scene, like, he actually talks that guy into killing himself, basically, out of fear of Joker. And, like, it's really a little bit more twisted. So I'm now kind of, like so many things with the Snyder Cut, I'm morbidly curious, like, what's going to happen. And when you try to revisit the past and remake a movie. But yeah, I didn't think I'd be hearing this one again. And Yeah, man. I was really hoping we were just going to get, like, an announcement of a new Joker for the Batman, which could still be coming. But this is just one more thing. Maybe this is kind of a therapeutic closure for a lot of these people who started down this Zack Snyder train. So maybe Leto needs this. I don't know. Matt, you look thrilled about all of this.
I thought I was done writing about this. I thought I was done. Like, I was so happy to be done with the rats and the boxes and the, it's so crazy. It can have four movies on its own. Like, I'm so done with, like, the bloviated, that whole, like, this whole Snyder era of, like, everything's so big and epic. I'm done. I didn't need this. I had already kind of put that to bed. There was so much hype going into the movie that, like, Joker was going to, like, be so different and revolutionized. And he's, like, in 5 minutes of the movie, and it was so kind of underwhelming. And I liked his take, kind of what's there. It's interesting, but I'm done. I didn't need this. So, like, for this one to come out, I was already, like, not thrilled, and now I'm just like, oh, whatever. let's just do this thing, get it all done, whatever 9-hour epic it's going to be, and then move on to other things, because I'm just kind of over it.
I think it matters, I'm still trying to wrap my head around how he will factor in. There are interesting ways to do this. I mean, there's still the whole Robin suit from Batman v Superman with a Joker implication. They've already done flashbacks. We know they love some flashbacks in these. So I'm kind of interested to how they're going to use them. But Connor and Nicole, what do you guys think?
I personally feel like Leto's Joker is so totally different than everything that Snyder has done that it's just going to be jarring, and I have no idea how they're going to play that out without it actually being a different version of Leto's Joker. And for me, that's what it comes down to. It's like, I don't know that we need to see Leto cosplaying as his own Joker again. You're right, there's absolutely ways to do it story-wise. I just feel tonally it's going to be weird, and I didn't ask for this. This was not on my bingo card.
I got three things. Number one, Leto was in the original Suicide Squad so little that when people do their Joker rankings, I give him a little DNQ, as in did not qualify. He did not have enough time to justify being on a Joker rankings. You want to try and dig into what his character was? What character? He's in and he's out and it's gone. There's nothing to talk about. Number two, as far as what he actually does in the movie, I could see it being as quick as he's on the boat with Luthor and Deathstroke, like the original Justice League ended. And we get that little Brotherhood of Evil tease that never happens. Number three, I feel bad for DC fans who didn't care for the Snyderverse era, but saw hope in things like Aquaman being this dumb, fun action movie, in Wonder Woman being a pretty genuinely good movie, in Shazam having its own tone and being a fun movie. The universe was obviously changing and going in a new direction. Unfortunately, it now has this anchor around its neck. And the words on that anchor read 2016, because everything that happened that year refuses to die. We have to relive this whole thing with the Snyderverse, with the Snyder Cut, with the whatever we want to call what we actually saw as Suicide Squad. It was a wreck. I feel bad for the fans who are like, I'm so ready for this to change, but some people who are really complaining about a Snyder Cut have started the domino effect to where we are now, where the DC Universe wants to move forward, and at the same time, it can't.
Yep. That sucks. I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that.
Silver lining, the DC multiverse is moving ahead just fine.
Sure.
This is just one reality. You guys shouldn't stress that much. This is just but one reality. No, but in all seriousness, this is not a hill I'm going to die on, not the Jared Leto Joker hill. So I'm trying to play devil's advocate, but I didn't ask for this either, and I'm not going to stump for it too hard.
Devil don't need no advocate.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not with you. I definitely want to see the Snyder Cut, and I'm kind of curious about how it may reset. I don't think these things are mutually exclusive. I don't think Zack Snyder finishing this up and kind of using this as the established canon to launch what happened in Aquaman, what happened in Wonder Woman, and whatever is going to happen from here on out, it is a bad thing. I mean, at this point, we're just playing fast and loose. But We'll see. I mean, maybe, who knows? Maybe Jared Leto will do something that redeems his Joker and gets him past Connor's DNQ. We'll see when that happens. Let's move on from DC to the Marvel side of the fence. So, we're talking about Falcon and the Winter Soldier. We're all wondering when we're actually going to get to see this Marvel Disney Plus series. But there was kind of a reveal that was made, as always, in the merchandising front. So, we got some miniatures in this, and those miniatures happen to spoil an aspect of the show that isn't like a game ending or game, like a deal breaking spoiler, but it did confirm a detail that I think will be interesting for the angle of the show. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, if you want to hear that, you can hear what this big Falcon and the Winter Soldier reveal was. Stay tuned. All right, so if you're still here and you want to know what happened with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, is we got some Mini Mates playsets that were released, and these little toy figurines had they come in two sets in two boxes that we saw that were one was Falcon with Baron Zemo, and of course Baron Zemo has his little purple mask on and everything, just like the comics.
So cool.
Yep, and the other one was Winter Soldier in his new kind of look, but also Captain America was packaged with Winter Soldier, and you're like, huh? But not just any Captain America, but John L. Walker is clearly marked as the Captain America, who is Wyatt Russell, who plays is going to be playing John Walker in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, who many people know as U.S. Agent from Marvel Comics. But what this kind of did was kind of confirm that at some point in the show, and I think we're all presuming like towards the start of this, based on the trailer we saw and the whole thing, like the government, it won't be left up to Sam Wilson and Bucky Barnes who inherits the Captain America mantle. The government will make the decision to produce their own Captain America, who will be John Walker, who again is played by the actor Wyatt Russell. So this confirms that, yes, John Walker will be Captain America, which is also another kind of echo of the comics from a time where he tried to fill in, but of course he was too nuts and, you know, he couldn't handle that job. So by the end of this, we would maybe expect him to become somebody like U.S. Agent, but yeah, this will be an interesting starting point because there's a lot of things we've speculated on the show that could be going on with John Walker. I think it was even Connor who dropped. Was it you who said he could end up being like a Russian agent?
I don't recall, but I'll take the credit.
Yeah, I don't know. I forget. Yeah. We've been doing these shows, but I believe you said we were talking about themes that could
love the honesty.
Yeah, we could themes that would relate to like real world stuff, and we were trying to say how interesting it'd be if like the government picked this person they thought would be this awesome mantle of Captain America, and he turned out to be like a crazy Russian double agent. But anyway, so that was kind of cool. What did you guys think about that, Matt? As our Marvel Comics kind of gatekeeper, you cool with this?
I'm cool with it. I think it's I was wondering kind of before, like they just did the broad, hey, here's what they're going to do. It's going to be a buddy movie and a road trip type thing. And I was like, how are you going to make that work for however many episodes? I mean, I get a couple, but like there has to be a driving force. And we all kind of thought, okay, well, this is one way they can go with the whole U.S. agent thing. And having that confirmed is cool. Like it actually makes me look forward to the series more. Than I was. I mean, I was already excited about it. I think it's smart. You establish another, you know, Walker's kind of like this weird kind of, he's been used as a villain sometimes and he's been used as a hero. Sometimes he's kind of this weird anti-hero. It's a cool wild card in the Marvel universe that you can use in a lot of different places later on. So I think it's cool that they're going to set it up. I just can't wait for the Falcon Captain America costume reveal. Because I love that suit in the comics. It's so ridiculous and like bright, and it's I love it with the wings and everything. Like it's such a cool costume. I cannot wait for that. And what I imagine will be like the second to last or very last episode is probably when we'll get it. I am curious as to like the shield, like because we see Sam with the shield like at the end of Endgame. So like, how does the government get the shield? Like, does he just give it to him? Like, do they steal it?
Well, I think that's
Walker, a new shield. Like, there's interesting things here. I like it.
I think it'll have a lot to do with, I mean, who is Sam Wilson? I mean, kind of, that's the interesting part for me because he is like a loyal soldier type. But like, what happens when things start getting crazy, you know, that aspect of his life? and
stuff's
you start
getting real.
Yep, and so like he might have to change it up. So, and him kind of like walking across the line with somebody like Bucky Barnes is actually like what I think will be the more interesting core dynamic of their kind of buddy cop dynamic. Is like it's kind of like Murtaugh and Riggs, right? Like Bucky's obviously Riggs, and you know he's Murtaugh, and they have that dynamic. Like one's willing to cross the line, whereas one's more kind of like disciplined and regimented and. You know, but what happens when they have to kind of get in the dial in the dirty world of spy? So,
the irony being that Winter Soldier is the one that's too old for this.
Yeah, good one. A+. So yeah, I mean, more and more, I really do want to see what's going on in Falcon and Winter Soldier. It seems like it's going to be a good ride. Anybody else want to weigh in on this before we move on? Yeah, all right. Okay. Let's move on from that to gaming/movies. We got our first look at Uncharted's version of Tom Holland as Nathan Drake. The internet's having kind of fun with this right now. So let's just hear it. You got to go on comicbook.com gaming to see the actual photo. Or, you know, I'm sure you'll see it everywhere by now. Yeah. By the time you're hearing my voice. So what do you all think? Let's hear it. I know there's a bunch of Uncharted fans on here.
I had to laugh because poor Tom Holland has a blessing and a curse. He will look like he is 20 years old forever.
Yes.
So yes. Even though the look is almost there, he just looks too young and baby-faced. And he looks like he's about to turn to Mr. Stark and be like, Mr. Stark, can I go hunt for treasure? Okay, kid.
So here's the thing. I'm actually more... I didn't like the skewing a little younger for Nathan. Like, as a big fan of these games, like, I wanted someone, you know, who was a little bit older to be that. I will give it credit, though. This photo's really good, and he looks spot on. Like, they actually did a really good job. I mean, you can't help the age thing, but, like, he looks, aside from the stupid, get over the tucked, untucked shirt. Like, come on.
Oh, who cares
about that? I can't stand it. Like, that ends up being, like, a hashtag. Like, look. I am all about finer details, but that's ridiculous. Like, I hate that stuff. So anyway, that aside, the one I'm actually worried about is Sully. Because
it's Mark Wahlberg, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And I have no idea how that's going to work. That's really not going to work. Holland, I knew they would do a good job, and he'll be good in the movie. You know what I mean? He might be a little too Spider-Man-y for my taste, you know? But I do love that Nolan North is on set, so that's great. That's the one I'm really worried about. This one, I was pleasantly surprised. I thought he looked pretty
good. You mean you're not ready to hunt for some treasure? Get down in there. I'm not going down in there. You go down in there.
I think we just found a new temple.
And come on. You're not going to like Mark Wahlberg, Sully? Come on.
No, I'm not. I can almost tell you I'm not. But I am morbidly curious.
All right. Anybody else want to weigh in? I mean, you really just got to kind of go in and look at it and weigh in on yourself, but... I mean, they've taken this Nathan Drake interpretation in a different direction. This is a younger Nathan Drake. Sure.
I mean, look, if you want a really spot on, I think, version of Uncharted, just go watch the Nathan Fillion film.
Yeah.
Right?
Because that is him. Yeah. That is Nathan Drake. That is the Uncharted that actually it seemed like the director before this wanted, and then things shifted. So we'll see.
Yeah. It is what it is. I mean, I'm split. I mean, and they know they have you in this vice grip because they know your affections are split. On the one hand, I love Tom Holland. You know, I have some Tom Holland a lot. So I don't want to say anything bad about the kid because I love him. And I know he has great charisma and he'll be entertaining. But, you know, still images are still images, and that's all I can judge, right? So
yeah,
I'm going to move on. Sometimes Mama said not to say anything at all. Real quick, let's give an RIP to Quibi. RIP, Quibi. Quibi's dead, y'all. Like, 2020 got another. Quibi is done. We were here. This was hilarious. This was like a Simpsons skit. Because we heard, like, oh, man, there were rumblings. Like, Quibi could be going through some major reorganization. The board is meeting. Everybody's get it. Quibi's dead.
I know. I felt like I read that the same article. It was literally like started, well, things are, you know, they're looking dire. And then, like, by the end of it, was like, it's gone. And I was like, huh?
Yeah. How's that happen? The meeting started and was over in 10 minutes. Hey, Quibi died as it lived. Quibi died as it lived. It was all over in 10
minutes. Boy, those jokes are all over the internet.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's so good. I've been making Quibi jokes nonstop. So I didn't want to do this because we've knocked Quibi. And the sad secret is I was actually seeing commercials. Their last commercial blitz actually got to me, like on TV. I was seeing things for like Boyd Holbrook and The Fugitive. And that Dane, not Dane Cook, but what's his name from Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Dane DeHaan.
Dane DeHaan show. That was like where he was the crazy dude stalking the chick. And like I was like seeing these things that were like, these are actually interesting content. Like I actually would watch these as shows. And, like, I might have to sign up for Quibi, and I thought I was going nuts. Literally, I'm glad I forgot about it for a minute, like everybody else, and now I don't have to waste that money. But, yeah, I mean, they actually had good content in production.
They did.
It's the only reason I brought this in today to talk about is not to knock Quibi, but to ask you, do you think it was the pandemic? Do you think Quibi's fate would have been different if we weren't going through COVID and everything? And if you're not familiar, Quibi was designed to be this weird kind of this kind of theory that people only had less time to kind of absorb content than like, you know, your half an hour shows or stuff. Yeah. So they would offer basically a movie cut up into 10-minute segments, and that was like a season.
Which, by the way, is true, because people play their DSs, people play their mobile like phones and games all the time on the train or on commutes and whatever. And it's excel, like that's why Nintendo's excelled, because they keep making things that like you could pop in and out of really quickly. And like the theory makes, I feel, yes, I feel undoubtedly, I don't know if Quibi would have succeeded or become, you know, what Peacock is becoming or the new Netflix or anything like that. But I do think it would have lasted longer than this. And I think that's just simply because, kind of like the XFL, when the XFL hit and just hit at the terrible wrong time, unfortunately, there's no Rock coming to like buy this one. I don't think anyone's gonna buy Quibi and try and redo it later. I think it was an unfortunate timing thing, and I think it would have lasted longer.
I agree with that. I think the pandemic had a significant detrimental impact on it because, again, it's designed for those short periods of time. The flip side of that is, though, is I didn't subscribe to Quibi, but I got to watch some of the programming for like different reviews and things. And there was like the series Don't Look Deeper was really good. But one of the things that struck me is like the way some of the content was chopped up in that 10-minute thing. It's like you're not really going to be watching it for 10 minutes. You're going to just sit and watch back to back to back, which kind of defeated the purpose, I felt like. So I felt like the concept itself was solid. The execution was a little lacking. And then you had the pandemic on top of it. I think if there hadn't been a pandemic and there had been a little more time for them to kind of work out that programming kinks situation, it would have lasted longer and probably could have developed into something better. But I think a combination of, oh, we're going to chop up this one big thing into little bites, coupled with the pandemic is kind of what killed it. Because there's some great programming. There were some great concepts. But the way they broke down, you weren't going to just watch it in a quick bite. You were going to watch 10 minutes and be like, well, I can take another 10 minutes. I can take another 10 minutes. I can take another 10 minutes. And you were going to consume it like a full thing. That's how I did it.
Yeah, it needed to be more like a comic book where it does a cliffhanger at the end of each thing and sets up, teases a next episode, other than just being like, oh, well, they stopped right after that. That's weird. Is there more? Like, it always felt like you were trying to just complete what was there, as opposed to like getting genuinely teased and invested in the next thing. There was no hook.
So. There's a couple caveats to this. Some people are arguing that at least being at home would have at least allowed people to do more quibbying theoretically, because even if they weren't on a commute, they have nothing to do but discover new content and sit around and do it, and that still wasn't an incentive. The other thing I always wondered about was it felt like Quibi was always a risk because it was just getting out of the gate with this concept and establishing yourself as a quality programming block. Because if this had taken hold, what would have stopped like Hulu, Netflix, everybody else from just being like, oh, guess what we just added? Netflix, minisodes. You want those? Great.
Right. Here they are.
Like,
or yeah, it wasn't exactly like, future-proof.
Hey, you know, all those office people who aren't stars, we're bringing them back. You want 10-minute segments of, like, Creed going to pick up something weird in Scranton? Here we go. Like, boom. Like, you know, mini-suits. So, I don't know. I mean, I'd like to see somebody try the concept that Quibi started, you know, maybe Netflix, like I said, mini-suits for my commute and stuff once we get back up into that lifestyle. But for now, let's just say another person. And unfortunately, there's been so much death in 2020, we probably won't remember you for very long, Quibi. I'm sorry. R.I.P. Quibs. All right, moving right along to our deep dive today. Let's talk about comics. So we have a couple comics to break down. I got 2 out of 4 of these. I got Batman.
Hey, so did I. So did I.
Okay, yeah, oh. I got Batman and Ten of Swords. And well, Ten of Swords was 2 books, so I got 2. But, okay. Yeah.
I got Batman and Spider-Man.
Okay, well, that's good.
So, there you go.
Nicole, what'd you get?
I was a big fan of Batman and actually Harley Quinn.
Oh,
and Harley Quinn, yes. Of course.
Okay, so
that's the big one I want to talk about.
The point is, between all of us, we got our homework all done. That's good. All right. So let's talk. We can all talk Batman at first, because since that seems to be the one we can all converge on. Batman 101 was basically the aftermath of Joker War. And the entire Joker War of summing up the point of Joker War and making it like actually relevant and being like, yeah. Oh, okay. Like, I'm interested in this now. Like, I'm back in. Because we did an extensive breakdown of Joker War during its run, and I don't think I made it any secret that my big complaint about this crossover was that it just didn't feel like – it felt like the grandeur it was going for wasn't there, and it did a lot of time just trying to explain to us why it was awesome versus kind of showing us. Or showing us any epic point in this. Batman, having Batman just kind of, in this case, Joker was right. And Joker's big point that he's been wrong about how he's been approaching Batman, this whole Batman theory. He's been wrong about Gotham City and like what it is and what it needs and all this stuff. And maybe not, we shouldn't be going with the Joker's vision of what that should be, but Batman does have to kind of rethink that whole kind of operation. So, this chapter of the comic is basically him. It's basically just one long conversation between him and Catwoman, and which is kind of I felt was very Tom King-ish. But of course, we get these other scenes that are flashback, which is also very Tinian, which is flashback to like, oh, but a week ago, and you know, him kind of having another long conversation with Lucius Fox about basically what the future of Batman would be. And to sum this all up, the new theory is what kind of Joker War works out in this weird kind of middle grounding way that it kind of settled itself is that now there is a Gotham where, and this is kind of a clever social metaphor, where there has been this wave of truly insane people who put on clown masks and were terrorizing the streets who have now just faded back into society. So you don't know what kind of society you're sitting on. There's all this suspicion around Batman and Bruce Wayne and the Wayne fortune and all this stuff. And basically to kind of protect his identity and protect the company, he has to make a decision about what to do because the board's kind of basically voted him out after this whole debacle. And he can basically kind of take the money or fight it and what to do about it. And the resolution is that he is going to have to be what we call, I guess, nicknaming lo-fi Batman. Which is basically Batman without the budget now. He has got to get back to self-sufficiency in a way that Bruce Wayne has not necessarily ever had to be, probably since he ever, you know, tried to play criminal and on his little Batman training mission. But yeah, he won't have all the resources that he used to have. And he's going to still try to have to do this Batman mission of his without all this power, money, and influence. And that was my main takeaway of this. And that's the kind of kernel that I thought was in a Gotham City where, again, we are very uncertain about who is who now and what is what. And, you know, because of all this madness that the Joker allowed to unleash that has appeared to go back in the box, but is not really back in the box at all.
Well, that was the whole point, right? Like, that was the whole, when the premise for Joker Ward came out, and like those interviews kept coming out, the central theme was we want to get Batman back to a place where it's not about the newest toy. And ironically, to do that, it felt like we got an influx. And I feel like that was to make, yeah, and that was to make a point, I feel like. Retro, like looking back, it was to make a point that like, hey, we're going to throw a bat train, and we're going to throw a bat drone, and we're going to throw all these things at you, because he now relies on these things more than just like in this issue where they're talking about being close to the city, the heartbeat of the city, right? So he's going to move to like a brownstone that he didn't even know he had. To be that rich is nuts, but anyway, whatever. So that's a whole separate thing. But to like a brownstone he never had, he's going to be living in the city and not way out there, right? And so like Lucius makes a great point of like, you can't 3D print any more cars. Like if the Batmobile dies, you have to fix it. Like there are these things. The one of the best parts is actually the Lucius Wayne stuff, because like, you know, Tynan always like, that's actually like some of the best things in like Something's Killing the Children are when like it's just two people having like a really weighty conversation. Like he's actually very good at that back and forth. And that's why like some of this stuff and the stuff with Catwoman and him is actually some of the best stuff in here. But I agree. I think like this one book, I could hand this book to somebody and go, this is what Joker War was about. And they don't need to read any of the other stuff, because it was all to get here. And we went such a long, weird way to get here. And but I like this. Like I like the point. So it's weird. It's like, liking what I'm seeing and liking how we, and liking where we got to without necessarily liking how we got here. You know, so I'm excited for that. I think the 1 year thing is interesting.
Oh yeah. That's a point. They kind of suspend in a way to, I don't want to start any DC beef, but to kind of spike Tom King without spiking Tom King. They basically sidestep the entire Batman Catwoman relationship question by giving them a 1 year hiatus, like Jenna Maroney on 30 Rock or something. Some weird.
It's also weird since there's a book coming in merely a few months that is like, hey, this is all about this guy. Anyway.
Yeah, whatever. But anyway, so Catwoman is going to give Batman some space to figure out his new Batman ways, and she's going to come back and she has to clear her name because in order to solve the Joker War, she basically made herself an enemy of the entire underworld. And so she's got to clear her name and pay back some money and clear. And they both got stuff they got to handle individually. And then they're going to get back together in a year and see where they're at. Yeah. So, yeah. Nicole. That's that.
Yeah. Well, I personally feel like, I make no secret of this, I've not been the biggest fan of Tynan's run thus far, because I always felt like he was playing someone else's game. This issue is the first time I've really felt like the book is being unshackled from King's run on a lot of levels. It's like Joker War had to like clear things up to get to this point. And I'm excited about the prospect that this feels like it might be more serious, but less dark and gritty. And for me, that's the big thing, because everything about Batman in the last, and I have read so many issues at this point because it's my thing, just has felt like this unbearable bleakness, like just bleak, 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 bleak all the time. And now that we're going to see Batman kind of digging into things, this issue really felt to me like there's a little bit of light at the end of this tunnel at long freaking last. And I'm really curious to see where this goes, because we're going to be getting more into, in theory, it looks like we're going to get to be seeing more of Batman as a detective again. We're going to see Batman doing Batman things rather than Batman with more money than God and a lot of grunting at things. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, for like the past 30 issues of Batman, we haven't been getting a Batman story. We've been getting Batman being sad and grunting at stuff while the villains, you know, run roughshod over anything. That's not a Batman story to me. And this Batman 101 is the first time I felt like we've had a Batman story in a very long time. So I am very excited for where this goes. I felt like the book maybe was a little bit, I mean, a lot of exposition, but it kind of needed to be. And it was a reminder that when you take Tynan away from having to be bogged down by like editorial constraint and you put him in those intimate conversations, that's where he shines. He's actually getting to do something constructive with the characters. So I'm really hoping we see more of that. I really do. And I was excited. Yeah. This got me excited about the title again. And I'm also all for that 1 year break.
By the way, Nicole has a very great article all about that on comic.com. Very good. A very good article about the Hope thing. I always feel like there's a part of me that, I mean, some of the best Batman stories have been about the villains, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been so many great Batman stories
that get
on the back burner. So that doesn't bother me, you know, as much, just because I like those stories, because sometimes Batman needs to be the straight man, constant grunter, brooding, whatever, and then everybody else gets to play kind of the crazy psychedelic parts. But I agree. I feel like this issue also made me not eye roll as much at the Ghostmaker. Jesus, Ghostmaker is the new vigilante that like wants to give Gotham a choice because of the stuff Batman talks about in this issue of like, I need to be closer to the city. I need to not be to the point where, like, the first thing I do is try and do it alone. Like, he actually points out, like, he got kind of rabbit 8 miles us and, like, points out a bunch of his flaws before we can in that little sequence. So, like, I'm interested to see now that this dude, who has all the money and all the tech that Batman typically has, is now going to roll into town and actually pose necessarily a threat physically, because Batman's still Batman, but a threat of like people are going to see him as a more legitimate protector, and he has all the things that like Batman is used to having. So that'll be interesting to see that play out. I don't understand the cover to the preview though, which has Ghostmaker versus Clown Hunter. It's a kid with a bat. It's a it's a kid with a bat and a mask. How is he going to take out that dude? That makes no sense to me. Whatever.
Yeah, I've got no clue, but I'm excited.
Quick aside, Matt, you mentioned good dialogue here in 101. If you want to get a better idea of this author's like his writing style, check out his series Wind. It's ongoing right now. I think it's Boom Studios. The dialogue in that is really good.
It's fantastic. It is absolutely fantastic.
He's a really good writer. Like it's just like Nicole said, and Wind is a perfect example. That Wind is a very like a fantasy book, but it has a lot of these like really intimate exchanges,
right?
And that's the stuff that does really well. Yeah,
yeah. Like, and I've said it 1,000 times, but I said it once. You can tell he loves Batman. Like the love leaps off the page, but it's just been so held down. And then you get these little moments that just sing. And I'm hoping we get more of that as we get beyond Joker War, which just didn't do it.
I just want to see slice of life Batman stuff, like Batman having to repair a spare tire on his own, having no way of like navigating a city or like how to do that, and like what everyday people have to do in those situations.
Batman having to use his own cell phone.
Yeah, Batman having to get streetwise is gonna hilarious. You could do. I would love that as a Christmas app, like a Christmas issue, as the Batman, like if the Batmobile literally lost a wheel and Batman had to like fix it and had like no idea. It needed like a community of poor people to like help them, show them how to change.
Batman calls AAA.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's an interesting premise, and seeing like what lo-fi Batman is going to be interesting. I also feel like it's going to bring Batman a little more in sync with what they're doing on the other media side, because this has been a notable characteristic of what they want to do with Robert Pattinson's Batman is basically Batman having to kind of fix it all and do DIY, you know. I'm interested to see how this goes. So that was Batman. I'll run through Ten of Swords real quick. I think I was the only one who read those?
I read it.
Okay. strong feelings.
Not thrilled.
I have not been a big fan of this direction of X-Men in general. That's just all it is. I read
that's
it.
All fair.
You know, it's just not my jam, but it's well written, so, you know.
I have been a House of X fan. I've been half and half on Dawn of X, and some of the books are really strong. I think some of them, I mean, we've been well documented on this show where we stand. This week, ironically, was one of the weaker weeks, I think, of Ten of Swords. The X-Men book is interesting because it gives you a lot more background on Apocalypse, the original Horsemen, what the deal is with that weird Gorgon mask, and how that basically kind of contains the dark will that controls Amenth and its hordes is through the mask, and more about Apocalypse's wife and her sister, Iska the Unbeaten, and everything that they've done. And it kind of gives you, it lays down some major groundwork for what I'm sure are going to be later quote unquote reveals in Ten of Swords. About, you know, where Apocalypse's wife stands and all this and all of that stuff. But one of the things I do like about House of X and continuing into Ten of Swords is how it is kind of reframing Apocalypse and the X-Men universe. I'm actually liking, I don't always like when they kind of anti-hero some people, but this is an interesting kind of anti-hero refitting for Apocalypse to reveal this kind of ancient history to him, that he was like this major hero of the ancient world, had this entire, I mean, basically built an X-Men of ancient times and had this wife and stuff like that. And this issue does, Hickman kind of does a Geoff Johns in a way of rewriting the established kind of silly characteristics of this character, you know, his whole survival of the fittest, only the strongest survive. This issue pulls back to show you that this wasn't just Apocalypse's insane, like, Nazi philosophy, but rather this was actually him. This was actually this weird noble duty that his wife told him before they went over to this other dimension in Araco and sealed the portal. Like, they knew that one day this horde from Ammonth would try to invade the world again. And so it was Apocalypse's duty to prepare the world by basically killing off all the weak people and making sure everybody left was strong enough to stand against this coming Apocalypse. And so that's what he's been doing this whole time. And so all of that's interesting, and it's all told to you as Apocalypse as they're trying to heal him from the injuries he suffered in Otherworld. And, you know, Apocalypse being Apocalypse, he has to do it the rough, tough way. And, you know, as he's nearly dying there on the table, he begins to kind of reflect back on all this. So, like I said, it's an interesting reframe of Apocalypse. And, of course, at the end, he gets his sword. And that's kind of, like, what that's all about. And, like, where his sword comes from and, like, the meaning of it and all that. So that was actually interesting. Excalibur was, for a minute, had me thinking it was going to be, like, climb out of the muck being the next lowest rated X book, probably next to Fallen Angels, which is done. But they keep trying to make the Braddock family like some kind of interesting Marvel centerpiece, and it just ain't happening. Like, they're just not interesting. And this book is just all about the Braddock sibling drama about who should be Captain Britain and who should wield the Sword of Might in the tournament. And basically, like, Jamie is crazy, but Brian and Betsy are kind of going at it, and it's all about kind of establishing why, you know, it is another character piece. And I said with Ten of Swords, what I liked was the books that focused on the individual warriors and what they're going through and what they're bringing to the table to the fight. Well, this is the first book to let me down in that respect, because
yeah.
Betsy's gonna fight, oh, great, but you know, it was kind of lame to figure out this whole process and faux drama about why. So, spoiler alert, Excalibur still kind of stinks. I'm sorry, but I said it.
Jamie's like rolling in his bed. So we're, what? No.
I know. Excalibur. Jamie Lovett stumps for it, but that's why we're a great crew. We all have different tastes. All right, Matt, maybe take us to Spider-Man. I didn't get to read last rights, but this.
That one could be really quick. I'll just make that really quick. I mean, this one. Only reason I really mentioned it was because when we talked about it last time, like, one of the biggest, like, highlights of the book was actually the Norman stuff, which ended up kind of being more interesting than I thought, because, you know, it's him wrestling with, like, being free of all this sin, but, like, all the guilt still there and doesn't know how to deal with it. And now that we know that Harry is kindred, like, this issue, it's not a recap, but it's like Norman with, like, meeting with Dr. Kafka and, like, exploring how he feels. And it's very much like a character study for that part. And then the other side of it is Spider-Man being, like, trying to stay alive, essentially, when the Order of the Web has all been given those sins of all these evil people. And so they're all attacking him, and it's this, like, it felt very much like a classic, like, 90s crossover Spider-Man comic. I mean, those were the comics that, like, got me to love the character, and it very much had that vibe. It's just all the quipping and, like, the, you know, Spider-Man can get a little melodramatic sometimes, but, like, I love that about the book. So, but yeah, that stuff was really interesting. But Norman just, like, coming to terms with, like, a lot of things of, like, how he set Harry on this path, how they show a great moment where, it's a flashback, but it's Norman in prison, but he's in, like, the asylum. And at the time, Kindred came up to, like, his door and, like, kind of tried to reach out a little bit. Like, they're kind of vague about it, but, like, he essentially, like, went to talk to him. And it, knowing that it's Harry now, you know, it's kind of interesting. But, like, he says, like, it, when I could have accepted him, like, I scoffed at him. I taunted him and actually made fun of him and, like, got him to leave and all this other stuff. It's really interesting. And then the biggest thing at the end is that Mary Jane is back in the picture, which, you know, she's been kind of gone from this. But, like, these Spider-Man LR issues are going to release, they're kind of side stories to the main book. So, like, Spider-Man, this one, he's in it about half. But in the future ones, he's not really going to be in it. He's not the star. It's the other supporting characters in those side stories. The LR issues are going to, there's going to be a couple of them. And if they're all like this, I might actually, like, that might be a tie-in series worth checking out, because they're supposed to factor in a big way in the main series, like, when it actually concludes. So, like, that's the main series, and it really is supposed to be, like, building this bigger pie. We'll see if they're all as interesting as this, but this was, those, if you were a fan of the Norman stuff from last issue, you should read this issue. So.
All right. And Harley Quinn, you guys want to take us just quick through that? And because I like Curse of the White Knight.
I love this book.
So yeah, good.
I love White Knight. Yes. So good. Freaking good. I don't know where Nicole stands on the White Knight series in general. I love this series.
Oh, I love, like, it. I absolutely love it.
Okay. Whole, yes. Yeah.
We're on the same page. For once, we're on the same page about a Batman-related-ish title. So,
I know. Oh, so good. Yes. So, for those who don't know, the White Knight series essentially is kind of like this alternate universe take on Batman and Joker, where Joker, it focuses a lot on Jack Napier, and Jack mm-hmm. Napier is in the previous series anyway. He's not really a factor in this one at the moment, but in the previous series, really, it was always like him struggling with his Joker identity, and like they could actually pull Napier out at different times, and that's when you get like two Harleys, and like the Harley Quinn that is in this spinoff series is actually like the original Harley. There's now a Neo Harley, but you know, she's like a single mom is raising two kids. They are Napier's kids, right? He's dead, right?
He's dead. He's very
he
dead.
Died midway through.
Because he died in the last one.
Yeah,
I couldn't remember if in Curse he died. But yeah, Batman's in prison. And one of the coolest things about this issue, like, one, I love what they've done with Duke in this series in general. But there's a whole conversation where, like, Harley goes to the prison and she goes to see Bruce, and they have this really interesting kind of warm dynamic. They do a flashback, which is actually probably my least favorite part of the issue, is the flashback with Jack at the very beginning. I know where you stood on that, Nicole.
It was fun, but it wasn't my favorite thing of the issue. It was fun, but it wasn't my favorite.
Yeah, like, the issue starts when they get to the present, and it's like her just like the whole thing where she stabs the soldier. I like laughed out loud at that because she steps on this little soldier with a sword.
As a mom, I identified with that so hard.
Well, because it's like, it's such a genuine moment because she steps on it and is like, how I forget her line, like, how dare you? And then later on, you see her take like this big knife to the little figure's head. And it's just like that little crazy. It's like that little bit of crazy, but it's like relatable crazy.
Yes.
But yeah, you see her like really start to talk, and they need her help on this case that has popped up. And so they're kind of trying to get her to kind of help the GTO. And she's unsure because she's very aware of like the line she walked, what happened, what broke her. And she doesn't want to set that off again because while she can't stand them half the time, she has two kids to raise. She doesn't want to leave them and her babies, the hyenas. So like, it's just a really interesting character study. Like, this Harley Quinn is so good. There's just so many layers to her. And then when you actually see her, yes, yeah, and then you see her do the detective work, and you're like, oh, this is awesome, because it's like bad, like it's awesome, I'm trying not to cuss, it's awesome, Detective Harley Quinn. Yeah, it's so cool.
It's such a relatable take on the character, too. Like, I mean, again, you know, everybody brings kind of their own experiences to comics in general, but in this case, it's just like, I'm reading her, especially with the whole, like, I'm a terrible mom, like, I'm just counting on time and nap time, I'm like, holy crap, like, I get this, I feel this. And it's so great because you see all these different facets of her that you don't usually get to see. And so it was just such a fantastic book from start to finish. I'm so interested to where this goes because we finally get to see she's being the detective. She's kind of being the big thing. And it's interesting to see her fight with all the things that are inside of her. It's so human. We don't actually get to see her be human very often, and this was just absolutely brilliant. It's a great book. The whole thing is great, but this is a very good book.
And without Sean Murphy doing the art, I was like, because that art is beautiful in all the other books. And so, and I don't want to mess up the names. I'm not going to say the name, but you can check out our review on comicbook.com. Has all the credits. But this art is a different artist, but it is stunning. Like all throughout, it keeps the same vibe. Definitely much the same vibe from the other books. Hollingsworth even colors the cover, and Murphy does the cover as well. But seriously, like if you've been interested in the series, and honestly, you don't even really need to read the other ones if you just want to start clean. Like, it actually does a decent job of establishing things in the first few pages. You could just start with this, but yeah, more than recommend.
All right. That'll do it for comics. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about WWE Hell in a Cell, plus some other stuff in wrestling, and give you a quick look at our rundown section about little things we want to mention so you guys are aware of. So stay tuned for all of that. All right, Connor, take it away. Why don't you give us a quick rundown about what's going on in wrestling? Well, I can't use that term now. Why don't you give us a quick explanation of what's going on in wrestling and what we should be looking to in WWE's Hell in a Cell?
Well, there's so much we could talk about with wrestling. We've got Chris Jericho and MJF dancing to Frank Sinatra. We've got NFL punters returning at the end of NXT. We've got WWE venues being investigated for possibly being COVID-19 spreading locations. But we're not going to talk about any of that. We're going to talk about Hell in a Cell, Matthew.
I told you that story. Tell you this one.
We're not talking about any of that. None of that's important. What is important is that there's going to be 3 matches this Sunday inside of a giant red cage known as Hell in a Cell. Now, they've only announced 4 matches for this show, but 3 of them we know are Hell in a Cell matches, and they all could be somewhere between good and great. We've got Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso. Jay is going to be absolutely decimated in this thing, but with the way Clash of Champions panned out, it was really entertaining. Curious to see what they do. We got Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton in the end of their trilogy. I'm ready for it to be done. I know just about everybody else is ready for it to be done. I'm hoping they don't give it to Randy because I know what that leads to, and that just doesn't do favors for anybody. So hoping Drew retains, and then he gets to play with all these new toys that are on Raw, or at least gives Keith Lee some love because the poor guy could really use it right now.
Yeah, for real.
And then
best match of the night.
Then there's Sasha Banks versus Bayley. A match that you can trace the storyline back 5 years.
Yep.
You can trace this specific one back at least 18 months, give or take, if not longer.
Yeah.
But the wheels are finally in motion for this climactic match after what we thought was going to be their first match at the WWE draft was quickly done away with because Bayley just wanted to run away. But Matt, I have a bit of a hot take on this one.
I know your hot take.
I know this match will be great because look who's involved and look what type of match it is. That's a given. But the actual storytelling they've been doing for the past couple of weeks has been lacking. Bayley coming out there and being like, look, all I did was beat you to the punch on who was going to betray who. So if you're thinking I'm some sort of bad guy here, you're wrong. And you would think Sasha would come back and be like, no, you're wrong. You're full of crap. I'm going to prove that. I made a monster out of you, and I need to take it down finally. But she's not really doing that. Instead, no. She's acting like she did for the last year or so, just being like, look, my name is bigger than your title, and you're going to be nothing after I beat you. And it's like, wait, so you're still just a bully.
She's not a bully.
It's like this. It's like if the two high school bullies decided to fight each other. We're not suddenly friends with one of them.
No, but you're going to side with one of them, and that's they're doing here.
At this point,
you're going to side with one. You're going to side with one.
Siding with Bayley.
Okay. One, You're set. Really? Now yes. You side. I've been telling you how good Bailey is for how long, and you now side with her when she's the bad guy.
I switched sides over the summer when she and Oscar were tearing down the house. Best heels. I love those movies.
Best heels. One of the best heels in the business. I don't think it's that. I think, one, I'm actually kind of happy because I'm not an idiot. And so when I watch WWE sometimes, they challenge me to, like, they challenge, like, my level of intelligence sometimes with, like, the giant swerves the characters make from week to week. It's like, all of a sudden, this person is just, like, altruistic and noble, and the next week, this person's, like, down in the trash, just, like, killing everybody. It varies so much. So with Sasha, I don't want them to just all of a sudden pull her all the way the other way. This is in keeping with her character for the past year. She's made points in the past that have, like, got me on her side. And when Bailey keeps attacking her, like, credibility and, like, her star power and things like that, it's very keeping in with Sasha's attitude to not go, like, well, I just wanted us from the beginning. She did that in an emotional promo, which was one of her best promos, by the way, like, period. But we've done that. We don't need to keep harping on the emotional thing. We can go back to just being badass Sasha Banks. That's who she is. That's who she's always been. She's just doing it really good right now. She's doing it really well. I don't want that to change. I think it's good when they're left to just be kind of anti-hero. I don't necessarily agree with everything they do. You know I love those characters. And she's doing that. I don't need her to just be complete babyface. I'm okay with there being a little hard edge to it. She doesn't need to go all the way.
I just feel like you could have told more of a story.
What do you mean more of a story? It's been 18 months, Connor.
Let me try this one on you. Say Sasha got drafted to Raw during the draft. So her match with Bayley on that Friday was her last shot. She gets moved to Raw and Bayley goes, "You can't challenge me for the title anymore because you're not on this brand." And then Sasha has to go, "Okay, the one shot I do have against you is at Survivor Series. So I'm going to build the team." And then she looks around at the Raw roster and goes, "Who's with me on this?" And they're all going to turn to her and go, "You were a monster to us. So no, we're not going to side with you. Screw you." And then she has to recognize, "Hey, you know what? I was, and I can be better. I'm still going to be me. I'm still going to be the boss. But I can stop being, I can tone it back. I can pull it back.
I feel like you are one of the five people that would like that storyline. And
I'm not done.
The reason is,
and then she wins the Rumble, and then we get the match at Mania.
Oh my God. The momentum is already there.
The momentum got sped up because she's on the Mandalorian season 2.
WWE does that stuff all the time. What's new about that? What I'm saying is the momentum is already there. It's already there. Extending it by another month just to, like, okay, I'm gonna say this.
I'm thinking.
You don't have to give me every detail in a WWE story.
I just did. That's the end.
I'm saying, like, to flesh out a character. Like, I don't need you. Like, we get on comics writers sometimes because, like, they leave, like, critical character parts out of, like, a character progression. And it's, like,
sure,
understandable because they have a lot of time. And there's a general theory that you're going to get all of that arc in a book, right? Mm-hmm. But with, like, WWE storylines, I'm not looking for that same level of complexity. I just need you to make all the dots connect.
And normally I'm not either. But this is a match that – this is a storyline that has gone on for, as we've said, a very long time. I want the story to have a good conclusion. I don't want it to be like, yeah, we wait around forever, and the match was good, but don't actually look into the storyline because it fell apart at the end. That's what I don't want. That's why I'm asking.
Now, here's where we probably differ, though, because I don't think this is the last match.
No, not at all.
Any stretch. I
hope not, because I don't,
like, it wouldn't make any sense.
So Hell in a Cell is usually the end of a feud, though. That's the thing. Like,
but one that's dominated this long, and for not even dominated this long, that took this long to build up, and one that has, like, been crushing on SmackDown. There's no way, with the way WWE approaches feuds, there is no way they let this be a one and done. We're at least getting two more. Right? I mean, that's got to be assumed.
Fair. Nicole, any thoughts on this whole thing? Am I way off base?
No, I agree with your takes completely on this. I'm sorry, Matt, but I do. I'm Connor on all of this.
I'm glad I'm not crazy, but I'm not, and again, the match on Sunday is still going to be amazing. It's my pick for match of the night. There's no question there. It's the little things that I'm hoping that they tweak. that they could, that I think they could do better, and they're not. That's all. And wow. Your face is unmoving. Last thing.
No, I'm right here. What? Oh, did I go away? Okay.
No, you're just right. You were just like, and I was just like, oh no. But one other thing, Roman winning is kind of a guarantee. Where does he go next? I have the answer. People aren't going to like it. I'm not too crazy about it. It's Goldberg, because they decided to put him in the Thunderdome audience last week to watch the latest title match. And that's my guess for the Survivor Series main event. So take that as you will.
All right. That's wrestling. We're going to end the show today with a quick new segment. What I said, it's called The Rundown. And it's basically where we just give you guys some quick mentions about some other things going on around the industry. Matt, let's go. We'll go with you first because you had a couple things in. So just knock them out quick.
Okay. Well, no pressure. So, the biggest thing is actually Power Rangers. So this Saturday morning is the big team-up crossover that brings back Legendary Rangers. That will be Grid Connection that happens on Nickelodeon on Saturday morning at, like, 8 a.m., so Eastern time. So, like, Austin St. John is back. A bunch of old Rangers are back, and it's been building to this, and this is just like a big kind of anniversary shindig for that. So if you are a longtime Power Rangers fan, it does hit the heartstrings a little bit to see Austin St. John morph again. It is dope. It is pretty cool. And that's my Power Rangers take. Did I have something else? I don't have a layout in front of me.
Wow, you're super prepared. You had comics.
Well, my internet issues, I don't have the thing because my phone is being comics. The internet.
You had Batman 103, Ms. Marvel ending.
So we touched on Batman 103, so I'll skip that because that was the preview. But yes, I am very sad actually that Ms. Marvel, the magnificent Ms. Marvel, is ending. However, the good news, I guess, if you want to look at it like positive side, is that she is still very much a prominent figure in the Champions book. Which actually started out really strong. So if you are looking for Ms. Marvel, you can definitely check out that series. But I think it's going to end at issue 75, which is pretty awesome that, you know, it ran for that long. And honestly, with Marvel's culling certain books that, you know, either aren't selling well or they have plans to relaunch later on, it won't be very much longer before we get like another Ms. Marvel solo book. So I wouldn't be too bummed about that.
All right, and just on the anime front, I just want to shout out that both Dragon Ball Super and Boruto have new chapters out, and these storylines have been pretty fire right now. There's a big things happening in both of those series, and it's pretty crazy, so check that out. And Star Trek Discovery is still rolling on with Episode 2, and it's still looking good. So and it got renewed for Season 4 already. So if you're into Star Trek Discovery, check that out on the excellent CBS All Access. So that's my quick rundown. And that'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. We want to thank you guys, as always, for tuning in. We put up new episodes every Wednesday and Friday on comicbook.com. You can listen on the site or on your favorite podcast platform. We are on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. You can tell any smart home device to fire up Comic Book Nation podcasts. Or you can also watch us live every Wednesday and Friday when episodes air on Facebook. If you miss it live, you can always catch it on the Comic Book Nation YouTube page. If you are into the show, want to make contact with us, drop topics, respond to anything, we are at the official Comic Book Nation. We are at the official Comic Book Nation Twitter page. Or you can hit us up at the Comic Book Nation hashtag. And if you like the show, go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. One day when we are back in our merch closet, we have a bunch of growing number of t-shirts we are sending out to our 5-star reviewers. So if you want one, just go ahead and drop a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Otherwise, that'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. Again, we want to thank you guys for tuning in, staying connected, and just, keeping us busy. And we'll see you again next time. Peace.
Deuces.
Later.
We'll be right back.